Shalom Aleichem, Rabbeisai. Shalom Aleichem. We're moving ahead in Maral's Netzach Yisrael, Perek Hei, the fifth Perek. If you're following inside, this is a long Perek, but in case you're following inside, we're at the paragraph that begins Shadre Ilavayu. The Maral is now going to begin expounding. He's basically been moving in order of the Gemaras relating to the Churban and expounding on them. And now he's going. We spent a lot of time on the Gemara of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and now we're going to move on to another piece of Gemara. So we're going to learn the piece of Gemara inside first, and then we will move on to the Maral's elucidation. So I'm gonna actually just say it out. I'm not gonna read the actual lashon of the Gemara, but I am gonna articulate the whole Gemara, which the Maral would then work off. This is the continuation of the story. After the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, they indeed sent the army against Yerushalayim. So it says that they sent Aspasianus. I think he's called Vespasian in English, against Yerushalayim, to lead the army against Yerushalayim. So he came and he laid siege to Yerushalayim, and the siege went on for 3 years. Now the Gemara tells us that there were three extremely wealthy people who lived in Yerushalayim at the time. There was Nakdiman Ben Gurion, was one. Ben Kalba Savua was another. You may recognize that name from the story of Rabbi Akiva. This was Rabbi Akiva's father-in-law. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses was number three. And now the Gemara gives us a little bit of background about each of these three. Nakdimon Ben Gurion, he had the famous story, which you may remember, you may be familiar with, of that the son was stopped in his honor. He had taken out a large loan on behalf of the Jewish people with the understanding that he was going to pay it back by a certain time, and he was running late. I'm not getting into all the particulars of the story, but the bottom line was that he was running late and he was supposed to pay by the evening, and he if he would miss it by even like an hour, the stakes would be very high. And Lemaisa, what ended up happening was that Hashem kept the son up for the time he needed to come back. The story has actually a more interesting nature to it, but that's just in brief right now. Kalva Savua, the word that literally translates as Kelev Savea, a satisfied dog. Why was he called this? So the Gemara says because he was known for satisfying people. Anybody who entered his home hungry as a dog exited satisfied. And Tzitzis HaKeses, he was known for the fact that he always walked on cushion. He always walked on cushion. And it was known that his tzitzis were always, that was the sight that everybody was accustomed to seeing, his tzitzis dragging along on cushions in the street. I guess they had servants laying down cushions as he walked. Okay, now, so what was with these three people? They were the Romans laid siege to the city. So one said, in order for us to hold down on the siege, I will provide wheat and barley for all of Yerushalayim, for 21 years. Another one said, I can provide wine and oil. And another said, I can provide wood, firewood, for the 21 years. They were able to provide this for 21 years. You understand quite how wealthy they were. They were able to provide this for all of Yerushalayim to hold out in the siege for 21 years. Now, what happened? If this would have happened, the Romans would have given up. It's very hard to maintain a siege for 21 years. But what ended up happening, I'm skipping a little bit in the Gemara, there was inner fighting inside Yerushalayim. There was a band called the Bar Yoinim. These people saw Jewish pride in the material. They saw Jewish pride in fighting the Romans and repelling them. And the Chachamim did not see it that way. The Chachamim preferred to go out and surrender to the Romans, let the Romans rule, but let us live in peace. Let us keep our Torah, let us keep our Beis HaMikdash. You want to rule, you rule. The Bayonim were insisting on upholding Jewish pride by battling the Romans. This is something worth noting. This is, before we get into the Maharal, this is something worth noting, that this is a general challenge when people tend to see Jewish pride in competing with the non-Jews on their own terms. Many people would see the Chachamim's attitude, let's just surrender, let them rule. Let us learn and do our Torah in peace and keep our Beis HaMikdash and our Avodah. They would see that as a sign, as a disgrace to the Jewish people, as a sign of Jewish weakness. Whereas the Bayonim, who wanted to uphold Jewish pride, these are standing up for Jewish pride. Now, the truth is that we have to understand something. We operate on a completely different plane from the rest of the world. And for us to have to uphold our pride by competing with them on their terms is actually a disgrace to us. We don't believe that showing that Jews are just as good as non-Jews in fighting, sports, this, that, brings glory to the Jewish people. Maybe in a very material way. If the Jews want to compete as material competitors, fine. But what does the Jewish people gain its pride from? The Jewish people gains its pride from what they consider their own national accomplishments. And what the Chachamim was saying here was, if we can continue to grow, if we can continue to maintain the Torah community as it is, if we can continue to have our Beis HaMikdash, we are gaining our own national glory, and we don't need to compete with them at their terms. This is not our glory, our pride does not lie in the non-Jews looking at us and saying, wow, they can shoot an arrow as well as we can. They can wield a sword as well as we can. They can shoot a basket as well as we can. They can make a touchdown as well as we can. This is not where the Jewish people get their pride. That's a big subject that really deserves to be elaborated on. But we're going to set that aside for now. Whatever case is, there was this friction. There was this friction between the Baryonim and the Chachamim. The Baryonim wanted to get everybody to join them in going out to fight the Romans. The Chachamim wanted to go out and surrender to the Romans and make a truce with them, but the Baryonim wouldn't let them out. So what did the Bayanim do in order to force the hand of the residents of Yerushalayim? The truth is, there were really many more factions. There was so much infighting going on at the time. Whatever it is, what did the Bayanim do to force the hand of the Chachamim, of the rest of the people of Yerushalayim? Well, the rest of the people of Yerushalayim, the people loyal to the Chachamim, did not want to go out. They figured, hey, if you're not going to let us out, we're just going to say, we're not going to join you in your fighting, because we have 21 years worth of supplies. We have no urgency to fight, even if you won't let us surrender. We'll stay here. The Bayonim were itching to fight. So what did they do? They burnt down the storehouses of all of these supplies. And this basically created the very, very desperate situation in Yerushalayim that ended up leading to the Churban. And there's more to the story. There's a continuation to it. But the Maharal is going to begin his elucidation at this point. So, first of all, the Maharal says, the Maharal reads intense significance into every detail of the stories that Chazal say. So, first of all, he says, also the details of the Hashgacha, of how this is all playing out around the time of the Churban, the Maharal doesn't see any chance here. The Maharal doesn't see any coincidence. If something was going on for a certain amount of time, or with a certain number, it has significance. So the Maharal, first of all, he wants to understand, what was the significance of the 21 years? It says that they would be able to support the people of Yerushalayim for 21 years. And also, what is the significance of the fact that the siege was for 3 years? So this, here we're moving into the Maharal world. As I've already said, when we began learning Maharal, I think this was back Shua's time, the Maharal sometimes expresses himself in very esoteric ways, and he is definitely dealing with spheres of Kabbalah that are above us. And we learn the Maharal because when we have the Siyata Dishmaya of actually gaining insight into what he's saying, it's so rich and profound. But sometimes it's a little bit above our head. So the Maharal says as follows. Move through Maharal world a little bit and try to deal with it. So the Maharal says as follows. It says, Yerushalayim, as a place of Kedusha, it would take 3 years to overcome it. Why? Because the Maharal does this. He lays down like a certain given that a certain number has a certain significance, or a certain letter has a certain significance, and then you have to just take that as an axiom and deal with it. And then often later in the works of the Maharal, he sheds more light on it. Whatever it is, he says, 3 is a very significant number in Judaism. He says you find that many of the fundamental dimensions of the Jewish people are 3. There were 3 avos. The Jewish people are divided into 3 in terms of Kehanim, Levim, Yisraelim. Therefore, they shows Gemara, so they're referred to as the nation of 3. And therefore, he says, in order to overcome the Jewish people, you needed to make your way through 3. You had to overcome 3. What exactly does that mean? Well, in this case, it means that it would take 3 years. It would take 3 years of siege in order to overcome the Jewish people. He says 3 is the strength of the Jewish people. You have to overcome the number 3 in order to be able to attack the Jewish people. So therefore, he says they needed to lay siege on Yerushalayim for 3 years in order to be able to overcome the Jewish people. And now he tells us, again, this is Maharal world. He tells us, Havein zeh heitev, and I want you to understand this well, that it takes 3 to overcome the Jewish people. He says because it's the same, this is the same idea of the 3 weeks. The 3 weeks is not either by chance that it was 3 weeks from the 17th of Tammuz, when the city was broken into, until the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed. He said, yes, first they needed 3 years in order to come to a point that they could actually break into Yerushalayim. Once they broke into Yerushalayim, they had to make it overcome another 3. They had to get through 3 weeks, even though they were much closer to their goal at this point, they had to get through 3 weeks in order to be able to actually destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what are we supposed to do with this? I'm not sure. We're going to kind of, again, if we're learning Maharal, what we do is we shelve this information away. The Jewish people, much of their strength lies in the number 3, and therefore we're being told that in order to overcome the Jewish people, you need to make your way through 3. Now, I'll just suggest a certain understanding. This is not the Maharal. This is me just suggesting a certain understanding. It's of note, it's interesting that, right, the 3 weeks is it's given significance in another way. We call it the 3 weeks of Puranusa. Plus of the Puranusa, the 3 weeks of Puranusa. We have 3 haftaras and the Shabbosim leading up to Tisha B'Av and the Shabbosim of the 3 weeks. That are haftaras dealing with, sad haftaras dealing with the Churban. And these are followed by the Shiva Dinechemta. After Tisha B'Av, we have the famous Shabbos Nachamu, right? The famous Shabbos of Consolation. But actually, there are 7 weeks of consolation. Shiva Dinechemta. We have the 7 weeks following Tisha B'Av share a theme of Daftara. So these weeks share a theme of consolation. Now, 3 and 7... The Maharal talks about 7 a little later also. 7 in many ways represents the physical world. So I'm just conjecturing here. I'm just conjecturing based on having been exposed to a lot of things in the Maharal and others far. Tie this into, again, I'm getting a little too esoteric for my own good here. But I'm going to tie this into, famously there are the 10 spheres. There are the 10 spheres that are the building block of all of spirituality. And therefore, at the root, they're also the building block of everything in the world. We have the ten spheres. The ten spheres, in a general way, are broken down into the three upper ones and the seven lower ones. So there's the Gar, the Gimel Rishonis, and the seven lower ones, Zat, the Shiva Tachtoines. Now, in a general way, the way we relate to it, like we already said, seven represents the world of nature, right? Because in a general way, the three higher Midas are above our reality. They're above our reality, and they're too high for us to access. What we're dealing with in the world that's revealed to us is the seven lower Midas, the seven Midas. The three are up above, and they contain the workings. They contain the spiritual roots, the spiritual workings of what is then revealed in the Shiva Tachtoines, in the seven lower spheres. It seems clear that there's a lot of significance in the fact that the Pur'anus, the misfortune of the Jewish people, is worked into these 3 weeks, which are then followed by the 7 weeks of Nechama, of consolation. But you know what? We're developing the subject. I'll continue this. We'll stop here for tonight, right in the middle, and leave it for tomorrow, because I understand that we actually have people attending Ma'ariv and Shul. I'm waiting to get back there when I finish my Bidud term. But now we'll end, so that those who are actually in Shul will be able to join Ma'ariv. We'll continue tomorrow, Bli Neder. Good night, Rabbi Yisai.